Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning I am excited because we are joined in the studio by Mr. Rashid Nouri. And he was recently one of our featured Black History Month innovators from PNC Bank. And I just want to welcome you.
Oh, it's so nice to be here. Thank you very much. To be able to come in here to studios at WCLK. It's fun, you know, because I'm into the music.
I'm so glad to hear that. And we brought you in. You are the founder of Truly Living Well Urban Gardens.
Well, the official name is Truly Living Well Center for Natural Urban Agriculture.
Tell our listeners exactly what that is.
Truly Living Well, we grow food, we grow people, we grow community. We use food production on our multiple sites as the platform or the plate on which we serve our programs. And our program, we're an education and training institute. Our programs, we do 7 sessions of summer camp. We have 6 after-school programs. We started 4 food co-ops. We have a multifaceted training programs. Right now, we're doing one with women and children. We have our boot camp. People come on Fridays for class, and then they work Saturday and Sundays in the field for a month, for 4 weekends in a row. But we want people to grow food, know who grows their food, the quality of food, where their food comes from, and that's what we train people to do.
You said your phrase, know who grows your food. Why is it so important for us to know who grows our food, and how did we get so far away from that?
That's a wonderful question. Horticultural literacy, defined as knowing who grows your food, the quality of food, and where your food comes from. Whoever controls your food controls you. And I think that's a key thing for people to understand. We want people to develop food sufficiency, food sovereignty. And mankind, humankind, used to live within walking distance of where their food was produced. But that time is long gone. Most of us have no idea where our food comes from. It averages 1,500, 2,000 miles before it gets to our plates. It doesn't work. That paradigm for food production is broken. This is why you get, I call it steroid food and cardboard food in the stores. It's not nutritious. It's not keeping you healthy. That's why we have to take all these supplements to get along. But if you grow your food locally, we are creating a local food economy. We're growing food where we are. And that way you can get food that has the same vibration that you do. All those who got a little notion of science know that everything in creation has a vibration. So you want to eat food. The best food for you is going to be that which you can walk to, but food that's grown in the same vibration, longitude and latitude as your body. We think that horticultural literacy is important. You know, our work, I thought I had invented this concept of gross domestic happiness, but I found out the people in Bhutan use it. But we are able to, not only do we bring food to the community, we bring a beautiful space, we cool the air, we raise property values, vice and crime goes down in all the neighborhoods where we are. There was a house across the street from our newest farm that I could have bought last year for $15,000. Now they want $86,000 for it just because we're there. And so your question was why? Those are some of the reasons.
I think that is amazing to say that we should eat food that is on the same vibration and food that is within walking distance. But then I also have been over on the Pacific Coast Highway, and I've seen what they call our salad bowl, where all of the lettuce are coming up, and it's so beautiful.
And the Pacific Coast Highway is a treat. If you haven't done that, that's the place to go. Whoever you're with, you're going to fall in love with. I guarantee it. But you'll see out there on that coast all that lettuce that's being grown that's shipped way across country. Why ship it way across country when we can grow it right here in our own neighborhoods? California is unique. 25% of all the agricultural exports of the United States come from California. 25% of the food production is right there. So they're able to grow stuff, but in a lot of ways it's artificial. The food that's grown in California was subsidized by you and me, taxpayers, because they have no water. And people don't understand. When you say there's no water in California, folk don't get it. There is no water. It doesn't rain. I had a friend who said she wanted to take a trip. She wanted to go out to Cali, but she was afraid to go out there now because of all our rain. I told her this is the most bestest time you could possibly go because you get to see California green, which is a very rare occurrence. But to take that food and have to ship it all the way across country, I think that's 3,000 miles to get California lettuce in a grocery store in Atlanta. It makes no sense when we can grow here 52 weeks a year.
So we just dropped the ball on that. We just got away from it. No, and it was just easy to subsidize and get water in California than to grow it here.
No, there's a lot of fights. I don't know if you ever saw that movie Chinatown. That's a real story about the water in California. No, what has happened is at the turn of the last century, 95% of Americans lived in rural areas. Today, 81% or more live in urban areas. That's a 170 plus point turnaround. So the people in the city need to have food, and it's got to come from someplace. So that's how it's evolved. That, and you get all the chemical companies that are involved selling pesticides and herbicides and the fertilizers. You know, the principal fertilizer they use on lettuce is gunpowder. You didn't know that. Yeah, after the Second World War, they had all that ammonium nitrate left over that went into bullets, and they didn't want to go out of business. They made wars good for the business. And so what are they going to do? They sell it to farmers, have them put it on their crops, because that nitrogen will make the crops grow. So you got a paradigm shift. You got a paradigm shift that's changed. But I contend that it's broken. And in the future, food production is going to become more local. And that's what we see happening here in Atlanta, local food economy emerging.
So the local food economy is emerging, and you are part of that. You mentioned the new gardens here that are in Southwest Atlanta. Could you tell our listeners about why you moved here to this, to the West Side, so to speak? And you mentioned the home prices going up, but what else does that mean to have this center on the West Side now?
We are one of the anchors for the West Side. There is a tremendous gentrification process that's taking place in Atlanta. All the projects have been torn down. They moved all the black folk out of the city. Then people got caught up in the housing boom and bust. That's why we have so many homeless folk out there. We live in the richest country in the entire history of the world. And you got people who are homeless, people without education, people without medical care. Frankly, it's disgusting. All right, but questions about why we moved to the West Side. We were downtown. I had 6 acres downtown in the old Fourth Ward. It was owned by the Wheat Street Baptist Church. And we were there for 5.5 years. It was a wonderful opportunity to show people, say, here we stand in the shadow of the downtown skyscrapers growing food. But it wasn't the most ideal location. We knew we'd have to leave eventually. So the church wants to do some development there. And we were offered this other piece of land over on the west side on Lawton Street, 324 Lawton Street, about 4 blocks from where we're sitting right now. And it's an ideal location. That neighborhood, Cesar Mitchell told us at our ribbon cutting last spring, that is called the crossroads. Right there, Lawton and Westview, because we have M. Agnes Jones Elementary School literally across the street. And we just put in a fruit orchard for them. I think Principal Woolfolk, I don't want to get in trouble, so let me just shut up. But some seeds fell out the sky, and they got some apples and pears and peaches and plums out there now. You got CAU 3 blocks up. Okay, we have a boys club, boys and girls club, a Y, the Atlanta Instructional Center. I got 2 churches anchored on the corner, senior citizens housing around the street, Watton and High, 4 blocks down the street. Oh, and the Beltline. So we are located in the community. We're going to be there. This piece of land we have now is permanent. We're not leaving. So we're able to really sink our roots and have a green oasis in that middle of that community that everyone is welcome to. Everybody can come. We welcome volunteers. We have tours that come through there. And people just come out and just walk in the garden. And particularly as we get more towards summer, we'll have a lot more of our infrastructure in place and make it even more welcoming than it is right now.
I think it's wonderful because, I mean, I'm one of those people who likes to play in the dirt. I play in the dirt at my house. And I always explain to people there's something about getting your hands in that dirt and seeing seeds come to fruition. You know, it's freezing right now, but I brought all my plants inside and I looked in one of my pots. I had planted mint last spring.
It's coming back.
It's coming back. The whole pot smelled like mint. I, you know, somebody would have said, why is she taking that empty pot in the house? But it was mint. It was starting to come. It is exciting. You know,
you got any worms in those pots?
There's probably worms in those pots, I'm sure.
You want to have that best. Indicated the quality of soil, the number of earthworms that you have. You got earthworms, you know you got good stuff.
Well, we're going to go right there then. One of the things you talked about was that when you moved from the old Fourth Ward to the West Side, you took your dirt. So what is so important about good dirt?
Oh, man, everything. It's all about the soil. To go back, you know, if you meet somebody, go back to what you had said previously, you meet somebody that's kind of flighty, what do you say? They're not well-grounded. Okay? So have them come out there and put their hands in the soil and get grounded. Okay? So there's a reason for these phrases. That's where it comes from. You know, we were in the middle of that move. We brought 125 fruit trees, one at a time. In the west side, we had to dig a hole. Then we went back to the Fourth Ward, pick up a tree, put it in the hole, dig another hole, going back and forth to bring 125 trees. I thought sure we would lose 10 to 15% of those trees, but we only lost two. And now how productive they're going to be. They're all flowering now. We'll see how productive it is. This freeze is going to hurt some of the fruit production, which is a statewide issue. We lost most of it. Georgia is the largest blueberry producing state, and a lot of the blueberries are gone. They're worried about the peaches. So we may lose some stuff out because of that, but the trees themselves survived. We brought all the dirt. I had truckloads of dirt. I spent 5.5 years building that soil. And those who have taken classes from me personally, particularly in the early days, my mantra was compost, compost, compost. Whatever the problems you have in your garden, compost is the solution. We try to emulate nature as much as possible. We are so fortunate to live in Atlanta. Atlanta is one great big forest with some houses dropped in the middle. Okay, so to live here and to be able to see all these beautiful trees, and I use those as an example. We need to emulate nature. You don't see anybody going out there doing soil tests. There's nobody feeding those trees, and they just grow. God is greater than anything that we can come up with. So how that works is those old oak trees drop their leaves, they break down in the soil and feed the tree. That's all you need. They're making that humus. They are creating their own compost, which they're using to feed themselves. It's this wheel of life, the circle of life, and it works. So that's what we do in the garden. So the dirt is important because I spent all them years feeding that soil, building that soil. There wasn't no way in the world I was going to leave that down there. I got in the middle of that move. I was sitting out there watching them move the trees and bring all these truckloads of dirt coming in. I said, whoever came up with this idea was out of their mind. but those that know me know that dirt, soil, that's where it begins. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. We start dirt and we go back to it.
Isn't that something? It is a cyclical thing. It is the circle. So now, as we move into spring and summer, a lot of our listeners, like me, they have their little gardens. You know, last year I did peppers and tomatoes and I talked about my mint. What should we do to make sure that we're using good soil for our little gardens, for the gardens that we will feed our families with?
Make compost. Take all your kitchen waste, all the leaves that you're raking up out of your yards, put them in a pile and use that as that pile breaks down. Take that and put that back in your garden. That's all you need. You can add some supplements if you want to, every little lime, sweeten it up the soil so it's not quite so acidic. But that's really all you need. Yeah, all those chemicals, I mean, that if the soil is healthy, the plants will be healthy. If the plants are healthy, they're going to produce food that's going to make you healthy. So I don't even grow food. We build the soil. We let God grow the food. Build the soil. So you come down to our spot, you can see all the compost that we're making out there. And for your home garden, that's what you need. If you choose, when you're getting started, you want to get some organic material to add, you can get that from any Home Depot, Lowe's. They have those bags of mushroom compost, chicken compost, cow. You know, they got a lot of stuff you can add. Only problem with that material from them is sterile. It's dead. So you need to inoculate it. And you can inoculate it by just going in the woods behind your house and getting some of that soil and put it in there. Because you want earthworms. You can buy some earthworms from the bait shop, put them in there and let them start doing their work because they'll break down the organic material. And the worm poop. is the best fertilizer you can get because it's high in nitrogen, but it does not burn. It's very good for your soil. So you want to put some worm, you want to see roly-polies and millipedes and centipedes. And you know how when you look under the leaves that are out in the tree, you get that little white fuzzy stuff? That's mycelium. That's the best stuff and best that you can have in your garden. That's how the plants communicate with each other.
I love it. So it starts with the dirt. And then you were saying in Atlanta, we've got 52 weeks of growing. So whatever you pretty much want.
Now and then, so the next step is to know what seasons to grow the stuff. You're not going to put tomatoes out there in December, but you can have collard greens, you know, in your root crops. You got cool season, warm season. Here's the easiest way to understand that distinction. Cool season crops are ones that can stand the cold. Warm season crops are the ones that can stand the heat but can't stand the cold and vice versa. If you take a leafy green and put it outside in the summer here in Atlanta, it's going to just burn right up. But a tomato, pepper, all those fruits that have seeds in them, all right, that the water that's around it is going to take care of that and keep it safe. So you can grow the leafy crops in the fall and in the spring and the summer crops when you do your melons, your peppers, your cucumbers, and et cetera.
And so in our state and in Atlanta, we can pretty much grow all of that.
And in the city, the only thing that I really don't get excited about growing in the city in our garden, things that take up a lot of space, like watermelons. I mean, let them boys in the country grow your watermelon and your corn. Because corn, you got to have there's a minimum amount of corn that you have to grow so it'll fertilize itself, which it does, but that corn silk is about. And you'll spend 75 days growing a stalk of corn and get 2 ears if you're lucky. So don't waste your time there. Get a tomato plant. You're going to get 20, 30 pounds of tomatoes off of one plant. Same with your peppers. Peppers don't weigh quite as much, but you're going to get a bounteous amount. And anybody is growing food in urban areas, whatever your space is that you grow in, you're going to have more food than you can consume. So you're going to be giving it away, sharing it with your neighbors and your friends. And that's God's grace. That's how it works.
That's how it works. I love it. So we know that there's a cool growing season and a warm growing season. Now, what about those of us who have gotten a little bit spoiled in eating unseasonal food? So that we have asparagus whenever we want them, or we have, you know, apples whenever we want them. Are we destined to go back to seasonal eating?
I hope so. I had a woman who helped us get started, and I was trying to teach her about seasonality. And what she said, well, it's in season somewhere, and she's absolutely right. And that's like that person who says, I'm not going to drink until 5 o'clock. Now, and here it is noon, so it's 5 o'clock somewhere, so let me get started. It's best if you eat foods that are in season, because that's the cycle that we have. Asparagus are actually a fern, and you're eating it just before the fern opens up, and they come up in the springtime. So if you're eating asparagus in October and November, they're coming from someplace else. They're not going to be grown locally. They're going to be come from South America, Chile, Argentina, where they're having their springtime when we're having our fall.
So that's the different vibration. It's out of season. Yes, ma'am. And we should just switch to Brussels sprouts and kale.
You got it.
Okay.
Well, you're a quick student. You got it.
Okay. I don't know about that, but okay, we'll take that. Now, Rashid, how did you get involved in gardening this way? Because this is your life's work.
Yeah, it's more than gardening. It's agriculture has been my profession. And it's so funny. People talk to me. Maybe some of the folks will listen and say, oh, that brother's so passionate about this work. Well, the truth is, you know my real passion is? Books and music. That's why I'm telling you, sitting up here in CLK is so cool because y'all have this music 24/7, which is a wonderful thing. But I had a burning bush experience back when I was a young man. I'm a child of the 60s. We were talking nation building. And in order to build a nation, you got to be able to feed, clothe, and shelter your people. So I was trying to decide what skill that I wanted to gain. You know, I was going to one of them schools that don't teach you how to do anything but think. Now, they will teach you how to think, but they don't give you a skill. You have to go to grad school for that. And I was trying to decide if I wanted to be a carpenter to build houses, if I wanted to be a printer to do communication, because that's very important, nation building. And God spoke to me. I was interested in health and nutrition. And my God said, learn everything about food from the seed to the table and to do it experientially. And that's what I set out to do. So it's been a close to 50-year quest. And it's taken me around the world. I've had a chance to see a lot of things.
So when you left the school that only taught thinking, mm-hmm. When you went to grad school, what did you?
I took a degree in plant and soil science. So my undergraduate degree was in government, political science, but I had taken all the pre-med. I could have gone to med school if I wanted. I always told my children, take math and science every year. Just take it regardless, some form of it. And I did. So I was able to go get a Master of Science degree in plant and soil science at the University of Massachusetts and learn the language of agriculture, the nomenclature of agriculture. And then since I already knew I wanted to do things organically, I had to proceed to unlearn all that stuff that they taught me in school and, you know, get on with my career. And that was where I began. And ironically, the first professional work that I had out of school was doing urban agriculture, urban farming. I was teaching children in school, building community gardens. This was out in San Diego. That's why I know California. And now I've gone around the world more times than I can count. I've worked in 36 countries around the world doing some form of agriculture, agribusiness. And then to come now, as I said, full circle, at this stage of my career, it's pretty ironic.
So back to urban gardening.
Where I began.
Yes, where ma'am. You began. I think that is wonderful. Now, why do you feel it's so important to involve young people in these gardens?
Absolutely. Because they're the future. Okay, I mean, all us knuckleheads as old and grizzled, you know, most folks my age and even some younger don't want to have anything to do with agriculture because it's too close to slavery. I have a extended family member that never brought his sons out to field. He's from South Carolina. He never brought his sons out to the farm because he said it's too much like slavery. I first came south in 1975, and to go down to South Georgia and see slaves still down there. What do you mean by slaves, Rashid? We got freed. Well, if you got the same family on the same piece of land for 3, 4, 5 generations, a cinder block house with a single light bulb, an outhouse, and a pump to get their water, they slaves. Okay? And by any other name, they still slaves. And to see that kind of thing was just really heart-wrenching. And so a lot of folk getting away from that. This is where we end up in the city. The reason we've lost all this land, black people had 20 million, 18 million acres. Now we're down to 2 million. Because the children go to the city, then Uncle Bubba dies. They're going to divide that land up. They're going to sell it so they can go up there. I talk about my father. My father's an educator. You know, he's a good man. But he was so happy to have his little piece of the sky, and that's what I call a condominium, because you own a piece of the sky. Okay. He had it. So he had a house note, he had a car note, he had his credit card bills, but he was living good. All right. Now, I challenge him, who got more money? Who is wealthier? Uncle Bubba, who only wears his overalls, his coveralls, and he's got them dirty boots, okay, gnarled hands, but he got a $50,000 tractor, a $300,000 combine. He owns his land. He borrows $500,000 dollars every year to make a crop, pays it back. So who's really the rich one? That's that brother that owns that land. And this is where we have tricked ourselves. We wanted to take that cash and go get a mortgage and get into debt when Uncle Bub don't owe anybody. Okay? And he owns all his stuff. So who really has the wealth? And I think this is where one of the ways that black people in particular have gotten off the track, because we don't own anything except credit. I mean, you know, monetizing debt is what we've done, and it's got us in the hole. We got to get out of that.
I think that is an amazing way to look at it, because so many families still might be holding on to that land and paying taxes on it, and it is wealth. It is something that should be held on to and
that's
something
right.
that should be utilized properly for generational wealth in all actuality.
If anybody needs some help with that, just call me. I'll happy to tell you what to do, or how, at least how to think about it, rather than giving that, selling that land to get some paper dollars that are not worth a flip. Okay, and they're going to get worse. They're going to snatch that. They're already in the process. This is where you're going to get into all these conspiracy theories. But they're already going to take away the value that underlays the paper money that we hold on to. Okay, I mean, you remember, we used to have gold and silver certificates. You could actually go get some gold. Now you got Federal Reserve notes that are not worth anything except who will stand behind it. And our government, the U.S. government, has the ability to print those things all day long and paying bills. And that's why this country is one of the reasons this country's in trouble.
Well, one of the things that you also said was that your career in agriculture has taken you all over the world.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's not a slave thing, so to speak. It's a food thing.
It's a nation building.
And humans all over the world
eat.
have to have food.
That's right. You know, so one of the tricks that they got is thinking that there's not enough food to feed everybody. That's a Malthusian, Thomas Malthusian economist of the 1700s. And his principal book was called The Wealth of Nations. And they got into, you know, he's saying there's not enough food to produce for. So that's what has led to colonialism, imperialism, the genocide that's taking place. Because what happens in all those places where there is not enough food, there's a political reason. The warlords are controlling it so they can control the people. That's where we began our conversation. He who controls your food controls you. So if you control your own sources of food, you're going to be self-dependent, independent. You'll be food self-sufficient and have established food sovereignty. And it all begins with the soil, begins with the land. So it's all connected.
I love it. Rashid, for our listeners who want more information about your center, who want to get involved, who maybe want to bring their kids out to get that groundedness, that I guess grounded is the word for it, but it's a feeling. I mean,
yes, ma'am.
You get it when your hands are in the dirt and you see those little green things coming up.
Oh, it's a thrill.
It is something to see. It is something to feel.
So many lessons. But you learn patience, perseverance. I mean, there's so many value, learn to share. I mean, it's just so many different values that you get out of there.
So for our listeners who want to participate, who want to join in, where should they go? How should they be involved?
The best place to start is with our website, trulylivingwell.com, trulylivingwell.com. Our phone number is 678-973-0997. 678-973-0997. You can email me, Rashid, R-A-S-H-I-D, at trulylivingwell.com. And my phone number is 404-520-8331. So you call me, I'd be glad to talk to you.
I will encourage all of our educators out there, all of our business owners out there, get in touch with this man because we need to know where our food is coming from. Mm-hmm. If you have restaurants, they can get food from the garden.
Yeah. You know, here's the joke about it. We used to sell food to 7 of the top 12 restaurants in Atlanta, but now we don't. And I'm proud of that because that means the food is going into the stomachs of the people who need it rather than going with all the rich people to buy their food. So I'd rather have my folk get some good quality food rather than having to go up north side.
I love it. So reach out to Rashid Nouri. Stop by the Truly Living Well Urban Center.
Truly Living Well. That's how we're known. The whole name is Truly Living Well Center for Natural Urban Agriculture. That's a mouthful. But everybody knows that just Truly Living Well.
Truly Living Well. If you want to truly live well, you need to reach out.
I'll tell you in a minute. I am truly living well. We are truly living well. Yes, ma'am.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, this has been a pleasure hanging out with you here today.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Peace be unto you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to The Local Take on WCLK this morning. Special thanks to our guests for taking their time to speak with us. You can find many of these interviews posted online for on-demand listening at WCLK.com. If you want to recommend a community leader or nonprofit organization you would like to see featured on The Local Take, you can leave a voicemail on the WCLK Community Engagement Line at 404-880-6211, or you can email me at KiplinPrimus@gmail.com. Good morning.